Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This episode was recorded live at the Manor Vale Lodge. Conversations on Dance at the Vale Dance Festival is generously underwritten by the Town of Vale. I'm Rebecca King Ferraro.
And I'm Michael Sean Breeden, and you're listening to Conversations on Dance.
Just a quick note about this episode, we did have a little bit of a technical snafu, so we are sharing with you our backup file of this particular event. It was just too good to not share, so thank you for your understanding, and we hope you enjoy.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for coming out, and welcome to Conversations on Dance at the Vale Dance Festival 2023. My name is Michael Sean Breeden.
And I'm Rebecca King Ferraro, and we'll be conducting interviews like this throughout the festival, so we hope that you will join us for more.
Most mornings at 9:30.
Yeah.
So it's always a pleasure to have guests who are working here at the Vale Dance Festival, but today it's extra special for me and Rebecca because we have friends. We're joined today by Jamie Taylor and Sebastian Marcovici, who are not only our good friends, but they were longtime principal dancers at the New York City Ballet, and now they work with Los Angeles Dance Project. So before we get into what LADP will be doing here, we want to go back and start at the beginning.
Yeah. So Jamie, can you tell us a little bit about your road and journey to the School of American Ballet and then later New York City Ballet?
Okay, we're going very far
we're
back.
We're starting at the beginning.
Well, I grew up in Houston, and then we moved to Louisiana, and so I was at a ballet school in New Orleans, and there was a girl, I didn't know about SAB at the time, and one of the girls there had been going often, and she was this like amazing like prodigy dancer, and so I started to find out about SAB, and I tried to go for the summer program, didn't get in the first year. The next year I just stood behind her at bar like every day and just like tried to learn everything she was doing. And the next year I got in, and then thanks to Aubrey Morgan. And then I did 2 summers there. The second summer I stayed after for the winter session. And then 2 years at the school. And then I got an apprenticeship with the company, which was pretty short because at the time, the rules were if you were to be taken on tour, you automatically got your core contract. And so Saratoga was like a month later.
Yeah.
And they needed us for Saratoga. So right away, I really lucked out there. And then, yeah, I was there for, I think, about 16 years. And then retired. I followed Sebastian and our good friend Benjamin, who danced with us and who started LA Dance Project, who left City Ballet a little bit before us to come to LA. Yeah. And then he also took the directorship at Paris Opera Ballet, and he wanted Sebastian to come and help, so I just tagged along. And during that period, I started setting other people's works, Benjamin's mostly, and some of Justin Peck's, and then we came back to LA and joined LA Dance Project, and so I did a little bit more dancing there, and I just did my last shows at the Joyce this last year when we toured there, and now I'm a rehearsal director, which I was also doing at the same time as dancing.
Yeah.
That's a perfect overview. Now we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of every single detail yeah. every moment. But let's talk to Sebastian for a second about your early training. You grew up in Paris, and it would have been quite easy to stay in, you know, capital of ballet. But what made you decide that America was a place that you wanted to be? Was it always sort of New York City Ballet that was on your map?
It wasn't at all, actually. You know, when you're in France, you just only know about the Paris Opera Ballet. And I did go to the Paris Opera Ballet School, you know, finished all the levels, was actually hired to go to the company. But that same year was very interesting, actually. Jean-Pierre Bonfou and Violette Verdi actually came. Jean-Pierre came to just teach for a week. And you know, that's the first time we met. He really liked me. He's like, you know, I do this summer course in Chautauqua every year. I'd like to like you to come. And I was like, okay, I think I should be able to make this happen. And then Violette came to choreograph a piece for the school, for the workshop. And she picked me to be her principal dancer in her piece. And, you know, talked to me about New York City Ballet, and she also was going to be in Chautauqua. So the year ended, and I don't know, something, I'm not sure what it is, but something drove me to, like, I got to go to Chautauqua. and maybe not go to the Paris Opera Ballet company. And then so once I got there, it was just an amazing experience. And that's in July, and New York City Ballet is in Saratoga. Mm-hmm. And so we were talking a little bit with Jean-Pierre, and I was like, well, you know, why don't we try City Ballet? And everything happened so fast. I think I was there maybe a week or two in Chautauqua, and Kira Nichols and Nikolai Hooper came from Saratoga to dance in Chautauqua. It was like a show, mm-hmm. They did a duet, and they're like, oh yeah, I mean, you want to go back with us? We have like one more seat in our small plane, like a four-seater plane. Yeah. Like, okay. Jean-Pierre called, I think Violette or Peter, they were both in Saratoga. And I went there and landed. Took class that morning, Jean-Henri was teaching. And the other class, Peter said, so I hear you're maybe looking for a job, do you want to join City Ballet? So okay, yes. I didn't really know much, but for some reason, just everything felt right, felt good.
Yeah. Right. Do you think that was maybe a benefit not knowing? Like, you were so steeped in the culture of the Paris Opera Ballet, yeah. And like maybe had that on a pedestal, but then this whole other world, like you literally just showed up and were like, okay, this.
Yeah, in some way, yes. And one other actually interesting thing that I forgot, the last year at the school, at the Paris Opera Ballet School, we have a dance history class, mm-hmm. and we had to write an essay, pick something to, and I somehow, for some reason also, that I don't know why, picked out the relationship between Balanchine and Stravinsky, mm-hmm. which ended up being my favorite ballet to watch and to dance. So that was also just the whole thing was just like, I'm going over there to do that.
I wonder for both of you, not coming from a background with balancing technique, what was that transition for both of you? For you, when you started in the school, and then for you joining the company, what was that like for you guys? Did it click right away?
Well, I had always danced. Like, I had started, you know, when I was two or something. Like, it just was something I always did. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily remember like always thinking this is what I want to do,
right.
But obviously I loved doing it. And it wasn't until I was at SAB for one of the summers and I saw like a live performance,
yeah,
where I was just like, oh wow, like I want to move the way these people are moving, like I really want to do this. And then that was just like so sure.
Yeah.
And there were definitely differences in the training. Not like, I mean, yes, big differences, I guess. But I was just so excited about being able to do that it was like such a joy to get to learn all those differences and like try to master them. And I loved getting to learn all of that and dance like a different way that felt so much better to me. And like, I don't know, sometimes I wonder if I would have been a dancer if I had not found Balanchine style and had to do the more classical rigid dancing. Like maybe, I don't know, maybe I wouldn't have ended up doing it.
Yeah. How about you, Sebastian?
I quickly realized that the technique was different, mm-hmm. and the people were doing things differently just by taking class. And I mean, I loved it right away. I was like, well, I want to do it like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just like, I gotta fit in, so I wanna. And I wasn't very busy, the at least at the beginning of the first year. I was able to go and take other classes at ISAB.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to go at 12:30 to take the class. So I did a lot of that and, you know, change how I do glissades.
Yeah, that's so weird. I was just thinking about glissades when you started saying that things were different.
That's the main
change. Glissades are really different. Yeah.
Do you want to do like a little visual
I don't know how to do the classical one, so
that's awesome. It's sort of like a transitional step. You use it to maybe gain momentum for a larger jump.
In preparation.
Yeah, but in the Balanchine style, it's sort of like more like scissors cutting versus one leg going, and then you transfer the air and land on the other, and then bring the foot in. So it's much sharper, clearer.
Yeah.
Instead of doing it ourselves to try to show.
The way you're doing it, you're doing it in one, and switch to basically.
Right, it's like two counts as opposed to, and then one count.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which takes a little more power and different approach of how to do it. But I really enjoy it. And when I came to Chautauqua to take my class, I ended up staying the whole week, and I was just blown away by what I was seeing. I was like, I don't know if I understand what I'm seeing, mm-hmm. but it's so dynamic and so exciting, mm-hmm. and so.
Yeah,
great.
I'm just thinking, because I feel like we have a moment where you see a performance that makes something click, and I'm just remembering now that for me was when I went to SAB and saw Midsummer, and Janie.
I saw Midsummer was the first one I saw.
It's often the last thing. Yeah. Janie was doing Lead Butterfly, and I think you were doing Lysander. You did Lysander,
right?
Yeah,
I did
Demetrius. So you were a formative part of my decision too to go. Sasha, I'm curious, because you were there, obviously you got to work with Jerry Robbins at the end of his life, but did you also get, you're saying you're taking classes at SAB, did you take Stanley's classes?
Yes, I did. Mm.
So it's, you know, Stanley was such an icon, and to get in there at the end of his life, like, what was that like for you?
So let's start with Stanley. I didn't know much about him, but I knew the dancers really loved his class, really respected him, and that was actually the hardest class for me,
mm-hmm.
understanding like even his timing, because it was really like unique and on his own.
Well, he also barely says anything.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of like explaining. You kind of just have to like.
I also did not speak any English at this time, so I didn't understand anything either. But I actually really, that makes me think of the relationship that we had, which I feel like he also respected me and maybe saw like some talent or me really trying. But he would just like, just because basically we couldn't really communicate, he would just like smile and sometimes like laugh at me. I couldn't really do it, but like he knew I was just trying. This is also the time where he had the pipe and he could still smoke in the studio. and Jerry, I mean, it was just like amazing. I was like, you know, for me, Jerry was Well, obviously it's a West Side Story, but I saw always these pieces that I would go to the Palace of Barbara and watch, you know, Dances at the Gathering, In the Night. That's the one that I think the most seen there. And here we are, just in the studio, and that was just incredible. But also, you know, sometimes you see those icons and you think they're, I don't know, untouchable and approachable, and it just felt like you and I are. We are here, and you know, just talking. That's how you felt in the studio. It was incredible,
yeah.
And that was amazing to be part of West Side Story's suite when you brought it to the company. And then he created Brandenburg, which he choreographed on the other duet, the Manuette. So that was just a dream.
Yeah. Jamie, let's talk about your relationship with special Balanchine ballerinas like Susie Pilar, like Riken. What was that experience like for you working with them?
Well, Susie was a teacher at SAB, and she was, I mean, I loved all my teachers there, but I think it always felt like all the students like really connected with one of them. We had like three female main teachers, and it was like you were like a Susie person or a Suki person, yeah, or a K person. And I really connected with Susie. I think just, I mean, she always had a sense of humor, and she kind of, the way she would talk about what we were trying to learn, she would always bring it to something familiar in our lives that we could like connect with, and which just felt less like, you know, rigid and do it like this, and it made it fun. And she also, like, you could just see how important she thought what we were doing was, and how much she loved it, and it just made you love it as much as she did, and also like feel the importance of it. And I really felt like without her, I would have been a totally different dancer. And she also, I mean, she just texted me yesterday, like to this day, we still talk all the time, and she's just been like a part of my life since I was 15. She would like secretly come, like she would come to the shows, and you know, we would talk after. She would help me with whatever pieces I was doing, or we would go in a studio together, hide out in a studio and work on something I was about to perform. So she was just always helping me, or she'd even just send me like the right video to watch of this piece from, you know, this ballerina from this time. So just like a very invested, nurturing, like supportive teacher. And then Allegra was just like one of my favorite ballerinas. I remember reading her book when I was younger and just being so in awe of her. And she and Susie are also very close, and I think that's kind of how I probably got to meet her or do anything with her. I did a couple of the Balanchine Foundation films, like original ballerinas coaching a younger ballerina in their roles. And so I got to do two with Allegra, which were like two of my favorite ballets also, La Sonnambula and Bugaku. And I definitely think Susie was part of making that happen. And so, yeah, I just kind of had this connection with her through that and through Susie.
Gotta pass it on.
A lot of people connected you and Allegra, just as not that you even look alike or have a similar silhouette or whatever, but a lot of the roles that you were so loved in were things that were either originated by Allegra or very associated with her. What do you think that connection is? Like, why do you think people?
I think maybe a lot of those parts were, I mean, I felt like I was always put in things that were like maybe a little on the ghosty side, or like just that kind of like, you know, the other side is sort of present beyond like the human part. And I think she was very much like that too. And I think maybe that's that's part of the similarity. I don't know, I always thought it had to do with that.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget? Quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I would love to just hear some stories that are related to your performing career, because to me that time was especially exciting. It feels like just you had such long seasons and there wasn't block programming, so
we're back.
Things were always crazy. Things were always happening, you know, people getting thrown on, what we call thrown on, where you barely know a role or learn it in 5 minutes and then have to go, or you know, you're doing the other side of the stage and you know you're live performance,
like learning it
on
stage.
Yeah, basically. So I mean, I know I've seen certain things with both of you that were similar to that, but maybe we could just share like some favorite performing memories of that sort of like, wow, this is live theater at the New York City Ballet from your time.
Yes, I'm not sure.
I mean, I'm sure there's many things I've completely forgotten even happened. I think that probably my craziest performance wasn't thrown on. I do remember I was not a principal yet, and I was doing one of Peter's ballets, Jeu de Cartes, and I was dancing with Damien Wetzel, Nikolai Huba, and Albert, maybe? Oh, Milos Martins, for like the first time. And I remember like I wasn't gonna get a stage rehearsal because Jenny Ringer was also doing it and she was the first cast. And like it was like there wasn't really time for me. and I remember Russell Kaiser like actually like taking me into his office and being like, well, you're not going to get a stage rehearsal and there's a huge corps de ballet. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of times the principals rehearse separately, but at some point you need to know, go with the corps so we all don't run into each other on entrances and exits. And also sometimes you're doing a whole dance together. So he was like, oh, let's just watch this video. And like, so I watched the video and was memorizing like, okay, the first entrance I have to go and back in the back of everybody, and then I just come here, okay, and then like the second entrance I'm gonna have to go between these couples, like just trying to memorize this for myself because it was never gonna happen until we were on stage. And then also I remember like showing up for one of my like important rehearsals for this and not a single one of them showed up. Like Milos, Nikolai, Damien, nobody came, and it was just me and Russell, and I of course was like bawling. But like whatever, you know, next day, I think they came the next day, and then yeah, and then I just did it. I didn't have like a rehearsal for the performance, but everything was fine. And I think I kind of thrived on, like, I loved being thrown in.
Yeah.
Like I kind of thrived on just like
panic.
Yeah. Or also I think it's also like, well, what can they say? You know, like if I mess up, like no one's gonna be mad, because also I learned this in like 10 minutes ago or whatever.
Yeah.
But I also like found it really exciting. I think like the adrenaline rush of that was like really fun for me. So I didn't get too stressed or like upset when that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, probably a few seasons later, I've been doing the role a little bit. And then in the middle of the performance, Nikolai, like he just sauteed on and like fell to the floor, and his knee, I mean, he had a terrible knee injury, and he pretty much like crawled off. And it was right before we had a pas de deux. And I was like, and then I was still backstage because like he had a little dance before I entered, and then, and Russell, I guess people had started to come backstage because Nikolai obviously had hurt himself. So Russell was back there, and I was like, I should just go on, right? And he was like, no, I mean, you don't have to, like, I don't know, like whatever you want. And I was like, yeah, of course I'm gonna go out. And like, but also thank goodness I did, because that whole dance, the court just stands still. They don't do anything.
Stage, right.
Which like none of us were thinking about like that they wouldn't have been dancing. So I just like went out and I tried to do the duet by myself. Like I tried to do all the steps we do together alone. I did do like a really good turn, which I'm not a good turner, because I think just in my mind I was like, right, and now he turns me, and I was like, whoa, I think I did three. And I could kind of see them in the wings, like Nikolai on the floor, and I could see Peter was back there, and it was like a big, you know, stuff was happening, but people were like, what is she doing? I remember after Peter being like, oh, I think it was better. Your choreography was better like than the duet or whatever. And I was like, well, I was just doing your choreography just like alone. So that was probably one of the craziest on stage moments, but it was also really fun. And I happen to know it had been filmed. And I think Russell had told me once they would just watch it like all the time in the office.
We need to get that video. Yeah,
yeah. We should ask Russell.
Social media, yeah. For sure. Rasha, do you have anything?
I don't know if I have anything crazy. And I did, you know, go on stage with one on, but I think most of the time I had a pretty good idea of the choreography. I wasn't maybe a slower learner. So I don't think I was like the go-to person.
Yeah.
You know, like there's people that are reliable that they're just gonna do it. But there's a few that actually remind me. I remember, I think we were doing Old Fashioned, and Robbie Afflos hurt himself in the middle of it, and so he walked off, and I finished it for him. And I forgot if I mean, I must have already been doing the part, or I just learned it or something, but at least I knew it enough to just go and do it. But
yeah.
It's, I mean, those moments were just like, oh, wow, I have to go?
Do you have makeup or a costume on or anything? Or
yes, because I believe that I was using a core.
Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if you were just like, okay, now go do this in my core outfit now.
I was in the core, and yeah. Yeah. I had some costume on. I just remember something. I think I was mentioning maybe Chacon, and Albert was doing Agon, and I was the second piece.
Mm-hmm.
Or something, I forgot. But I must have been putting on a makeup, and he was maybe in the first piece, and he might have said something like, no, he did the first entrance of Agon. And I'm still upstairs, like, putting makeup on. And they're like, well, Albert is out. Just put his back out. So I just finished the makeup quickly, put the costume on, and went down. And that was the time to just go on and do the pedal with Wendy.
Oh, God. Have you done with Wendy before? Is that your partner, or is it?
I don't remember. I know I have done it with Maria.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure if I might have done one or two rehearsals, because maybe I was going to eventually do it with her. But I think, I don't think I've done it with her.
Those moments are just so fun. Yeah. I mean, when it's just like, Sebastian Margarici did the stage immediately, and I'm like, what?
Making me think, because we talk about this a lot, ballet stress dreams, and like those are the kind of dreams that you have, and like we still have them. I bet you guys have
I still
them?
Have them, and yeah. Susie still has them.
Really?
She tells me about them.
What do yours like consist of? For me, it's always like, put on your pointe shoes. And I'm like, but I haven't worn them in 5 years. It doesn't matter.
I had that one recently where it was like, but I haven't even, I was like, trying to put them on. Yeah, it's always like, oh, but I don't know the dance. But it's like, you're on stage and it's happening.
Yeah.
And you're trying to learn it. Or or you can't get your shoe on, or you can't find them sometimes. It's like, I don't know where they are.
Yeah, I had this dream, and it was years ago, but for some reason, it still feels like really vivid. and I actually was going to, normal things, I was going to have to go and do Agon. And I cannot put my tights on. I mean, you know, it's like when you're like running away from something and you can't run. And so, can't do it.
Yeah. Which, like, all those things don't happen in real life.
No. Mine is always like, I put my hair up in a bun and then it falls down. And my ribbons, the same, I put my ribbons on and they fall up. And I'm like, what's happening? And then I wake up and I'm like, this is terrible. Yeah. I guess it'll go away.
I've added a new stress dream, right? And it's that I'm staging a ballet, but I don't know it.
Oh, like,
that's terrible. They're like, but you, we hired you to do this. And I don't know it. You're supposed to take out the video. I don't know. Right, but we're getting
sidetracked. Sorry, okay, we did get sidetracked.
We have not talked about anything at all.
I did want to talk, though, about your romantic relationship, because they're not uncommon within ballet. So tell us about when you guys first started dancing together, maybe some of your favorite roles that you enjoyed dancing together on stage.
The first principal role I ever got to do was La Valse, and it was with Sebastian. So that was always like a special piece for us. And we just, I don't know, we kind of started getting paired together. Like, Peter was always putting us together. He was making new pieces on us. And so I think we also, it was kind of like a love at first sight kind of a thing for us. Like, even before I was in the company, like, you know, I knew him on the stage, and so we always were just kind of like, but he also had a girlfriend at the time when I got in the company, and I'm like 5 years younger, so I was also just like, ballet, like I didn't have time for anything else. So it was probably a few years before we actually started dating.
That you were dancing together.
Yeah. And then that was it. I mean, that was 23 years ago.
I mean, I think, you know, obviously it's different for couples, and sometimes couples, they can't really work together.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason for us, it was better. Because we happen to also have this really the same vision of what we want in dance, how we like dance. We kind of have the same view.
Mm-hmm.
So when we approach a piece together, we're already on the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, if we're able to talk to each other, you know, in the deeper level to understand why we're dancing, made it, I think we could do things better. You know, mm-hmm. With the partner, and it really felt like we could really be one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which was good for me, because I was a little wild and I could just really rely on Sebastian. Right.
you chose to retire together as well. What were the next steps at that point? Did you have things lined up that were going to be the next? You know, you guys are such buttonheads. We always knew you were going to stay in the biz, I feel.
Well, I think that started from me. Benjamin asked. Had asked me, or he asked me to, if I wanted to come to Elena's project. And I had a few more years to dance, but I, you know, we were dealing with injuries, and I had injury on my foot that didn't allow me at this point to do the role that I've been doing as well, or you know, things that I was fearless. Now I had to hold back a little bit, and mm-hmm. I was like, I don't think I need to do this. Why should I now go on stage with some fear or not, you know, be able to really give it all? And I've done it all for a long time. So it was a chance to exit in some ways. At the time, I was ready to, and then having another job, you know. So I think it's time for me.
I think also before we retired, he had gotten the Paris Opera directorship, because I know we knew that before we left. but we couldn't talk about it.
Yeah.
So, and it's kind of like, oh, we're just going to LA. And then, yeah, for me, I mean, I definitely have more years, but I also have kind of felt like, I mean, we were going to stay together, like whatever we did. So we weren't interested in like one of us going away and, you know, me staying there and dancing. And I had kind of felt like I had gotten to do most of the things I wanted to do, and the ones I hadn't, I probably wasn't going to get to do. And I kind of felt like, you know, the next 5 years, I knew like exactly what it was going to be like. And so I was really happy with what I had gotten to do and felt like I could just leave it there. And I had also always thought like, I don't want to be like an old ballerina. Like I'd watched so many of my favorite ballerinas retire, like they just went until, you know, they couldn't. And it's almost like you're watching the memory of them that you have of them rather than like the way they look right now on stage. And I kind of was like, I don't know, once I start to not be able to do things that well, as well, then I don't want to do them, you know? Which was also, I think, why it was like interesting for me to then dance at LA Dance Project, because like I felt like I still, you know, loved dancing, but it was like a totally different kind of thing and didn't require the same kind of perfection, maybe in a different way. But you know, the way we all see, like the way it should look.
That was one thing that we wanted to talk to you about, was like, what did that feel like? So you've done this career with perfection, like you're talking about point shoes and cross legs and all of this that you're seeking, and now you're kind of able to jump into a totally different feeling with dancing. Was that freeing for you? Did you find it challenging? Did you enjoy the challenge? What was that transition like a little bit?
Well, I guess I had not danced for 2 years,
right?
By the time we went back to LA. I mean, it was very comfortable because it was Benjamin's company and he choreographs on them and he had choreographed on us a lot, and I loved doing his work. So like that part of it felt super familiar, just like wasn't on point and was usually like in sweatpants. So like it wasn't like completely, you know, foreign. And I really was just there to like enjoy dancing, you know. I wasn't there for like any sort of goal in particular, except to just like learn about things that I didn't know about yet and to like have fun trying something different.
Let me actually talk about that for a second. Yeah. Like the learning, knowing about things that you don't know about. Like, I mean, the rep, aside from Benjamin's choreography, of course, you know very well, and you understand like his aesthetic and you know, style, but a lot of the rep at LADP is quite different from anything you experienced in New York City Ballet. So what was that kind of, I guess, learning curve like, both like as a rehearsal director and as a dancer? What was the learning process like?
So in the end, it's somewhat all the same. Which
it's the same conclusion. Yeah. It's like all connected. It all comes from the same place.
Right.
But the only thing to learn was, you know, ballet, until you take it more and artistically, contemporary dance can be more based really on feelings, and depending on what choreography and what you're doing. But so it was understanding how this can be somewhat taught or understood, or in some ways for contemporary dancers, that's all they train for, especially understanding them. So that was the sort of the learning. At the same time, it wasn't really complicated, it's just an open mind and seeing things a bit differently than just like, there's not a model, like, you know, in classical ballet, this is how you dance,
right.
Even balancing, this is the style, this is how you technique. Here, it's wider, it's a little bit looser. Not that there's also like very specific things in those pieces, but the global understanding is a little bit, it's like you have to find the mindset, the groove. What it's more about, it's a bit more emotional in some ways. Although it can be very abstract, but it's like it doesn't start from necessarily a technique, but a bit more mindset.
Yeah, I think also it's just like as dancers, you have different choreographers come in, and so you have to like learn what that choreographer wants or what that choreographer's style is. And I think it's just taking each piece for what it is and learning what that choreographer's intentions are, what their technique is like, which most of the time, you know, if we're doing an existing piece, someone's coming in and setting it, and we just get to learn everything from them about this piece and about the movement, just like we would with someone who would come to City Ballet and make a piece. I mean, it just might be like more differences, but it's also, I think like the relationship to music is really different. And that was something that was hard for me as a dancer with that group of dancers, because we're taught a really specific way to hear music and listen to music. So it was like, you guys, we could put anything on and we would dance at the exact same time to it. And I had a hard time like dancing together with these dancers because I had such a specific like hearing training. And when it's like, I mean, sometimes, and we did things at City Ballet too that weren't to the music, and that's different. You're dancing, you have like little things in the music that tell you if you're late or early kind of thing. Which like, it's not like we'd never done that, but there's also just some differences with like counting or like never counting, and like just having like a body rhythm, you know, or like
the difference is how you understand music and what you can do with it.
But yeah, it's also aside from something more modern, like a Graham piece, which is like a specific technique which we've done at LA Dance Project, yeah, some of the sort of newer, like contemporary stuff, it's like very open. Like the steps, you know, you can give every step a name in a Balanchine piece, and in a contemporary piece, you can't really name the steps,
right?
Which also makes them harder to learn for somebody like me, because I'm just like, you can have like a list in a Balanchine piece. You do arabesque, step, glissade, whatever, and you can memorize that and memorize the steps. But here it's like, I can't put a name to the movements. I really have to memorize the movements or make up a name for them to help my like memory process.
Right.
So like, even though sometimes things start out really open, eventually they kind of get specified for like, even for like contemporary works.
Yeah.
Or there's like things that are just always an improv moment, and like that's interesting and can be scary. But
I'm wondering, as a rehearsal director, when you're writing things down, how are you writing down the movements that the dancers are doing, so that you also, right, you can't just put it in your mind, you have to also kind of notate it.
My dancers, when they see my notes, they're always like, whoa. Well, they see some, because we do some pieces that are like, that do have counts and really, and like steps that you can notate. But like, sometimes one of the pieces we're working on now is a lot less like specific in steps or naming steps. And sometimes I'm just writing notes about like what this section is supposed to feel like when you're watching it, like what those dancers' intentions should be in the movement. I write down, you know, like anything I hear the choreographer kind of like describing about a section, because those are also the kind of things, like for them, when we come back to do it again, you know, rather than me being like, and remember your foot should be like this way, it's more like telling them, you know, you're going into this, this is supposed to feel really relaxed or slow, and then there's, you know, I'm not giving a good example right now because I'm not talking about anything specific, but it's sort of like the way to get them to point B from point A is like a little different than just being like, it's arabesque. And sometimes, it's more about a descriptive cue about an intention. that gets them there, rather than talking about the actual physicality of where their body parts are.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure the audience wants to ask questions, so I want to do one more before we open it up to them. Could we just talk a little bit about the program that Vail audiences will be seeing LADP? It's tomorrow night, right? Which is the 31st. Mm-hmm. What values will we be seeing?
I'll talk about the first two, and you can talk about the last one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The first piece on the program is a Pam Tanowitz piece, which was originally made for the Royal Ballet. And so she staged it for us. It's interesting because I remember her saying, oh, that person's in the piece because they were like an understudy in the back and I liked them, so I put them in this section. Mm-hmm. And like, so we've also ended up with like a different number of people in the piece because there was like someone, she's like, oh, let's just have that person also be in this. And so, which is something I think she generally does with her work, which is kind of cool. It's a really beautiful piece. The second piece is by Madeline Hollander. It's called Five Life Calibrations, and it's a really interesting piece, I think. It's all about calibrating, and so basically the dancers have a set of rules for each section of the piece that they're following. For example, like most sections begin with some sort of competition. Sometimes it's like a balancing competition. So it'll be different every single night. If you're the first one to fall, you're gonna be the first one to start like the next thing. So, I mean, you have to rehearse it a lot because you have to know what to do if you end up in the first position or if you end up in like the seventh position on this day. So it's like, you know, you fall, you have to do two circles like this, you have to wait for your group, then you do like four of these, then you have to do this thing, and like, so there'll be like two groups at the same time, but they'll always be at a different time than each other, depending on how long it took, you know, for the competition to end, or, and then every section ends with a Doppler sound, which cues the dancers for like the next section, and then like then a new competition will start. It's very fun to dance. Like that was something I would have never gotten to do at City Ballet. It'd just be like thinking about rules to tell me what to do next, like while I was performing. But I thought that was like really, really fun.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to watch, especially if you kind of know that that's what's going on, because then you can start to try to figure out like what the rules are.
Right.
And then we have a third piece.
Quartet for Five by Bobby Jean Smith and her husband, or Schreiber. So Quartet for Five because it's a string quartet for five dancers. And that's where the title comes from. You're gonna find it's a piece you're gonna make your own story. There's five characters. That really connects. It's the whole thing is based on their involvement. Like we talk about, you know, it's like how you coach this and their step, this very distinct choreography. But in the end, it's all going to be how much you put into it and what's your own story that makes everybody connect. It's very high energy. They're going to die here in the altitude because they already do at sea level. Right?
Oh my gosh!
It's very very interesting, very I'd say emotional. Also, you watch this and everybody will have a different story of what happened, which is great. That's kind of what you want to have. And you know, just going back a little bit when you're asking how as a rehearsal director you learn things, you coach it, and you know a lot of things that happen now, and that happens a lot with Bobby Jean is the dancers also make some choreography, and then she brings hers, and then they mix it, or she transforms whatever they make, and which for my job is extremely hard and complicated because you in the room, so you know you can the dancers go in each side of the room and start making their own thing. So you can't really, at that time, there's nothing for you to do.
Mm-hmm.
You can stare at one dancer maybe and try to see what they're making, but you know, they're making it. So,
right.
So everything they make, you don't know their choreography.
Right.
Yeah, and then it's just made. And you're like, oh, yeah. There's a whole dance I don't know.
So there's a little bit like catching up to do later on, especially if you have to teach it to somebody else. Usually dancers can help teach each other, especially if it's in that situation. Mm-hmm. If they're gone and you're just like, okay, you gotta figure it out.
It's video study.
Yeah. But anyways, this this piece is people meeting, interacting. There's a lot of joy, there's a lot of energy, really different emotions.
It's also to like a really beautiful glass piece of music. Mm-hmm. So glass.
Wonderful. Well, we can't wait to see it. We're very excited. We have time for some audience questions. We have a microphone here that Sierra will pass around. We have a question here in the back from the gentleman in that yellow shirt.
I would assume that the transition from being a dancer to a retired dancer can be challenging. Could you talk a little bit about that transition?
For me, it felt really great. You know, when we have long careers like the way we have, or I'll just speak for myself, dance a lot in the sense that I was probably 3 years old and very intense. And if you have if you're happy with your career, which I was, and that's why it was easier to transition. It is hard because dancers, the performers, I think any performers, the stage is just unique. Nobody can understand what the feeling is unless you've done it really. So leaving that, it's hard. So it's important to be at peace with it, really. And then you go on and put your heart into your next thing. And physically is so demanding that you actually get another breath of energy. As dancers, you don't take stairs. It's an elevator, you take the elevator. And no, because I just remember there was like the main thing when I stopped dancing, I was like, oh my God, I'm just running down the street, I'm going up the stairs, like, hey.
Exhausted anymore.
No. Well, you're also like worried about injuries. Yeah. You're like, if I take these stairs, my calves are going to get really tight. It's like a hole.
Totally.
But yes, it is, go from the performing art to not. It's mentally, you have to prepare yourself. Yeah, you have to really find a way to transition from, a high to being down the street.
Did you guys ever consider not continuing in the ballet field after your retirement? In the dance field?
Right? Not really. Yeah. But I think it was also like, I think people were asking us to do things before we even really had time to like think about whether or not, and when I stopped, I was kind of like, well, I'm just going to like see what I want to do. And I said yes to like anything anyone asked me to do just so I could try it out and be like, oh, I hate this or oh, I love this. But like to answer your question, I think it is very difficult for many dancers to retire from dancing. It's something you do your whole life, every day. You're just so in love with it. And Sebastian's right. It's like finding some sort of way to be like okay with it or to find something to move on to that's going to make you happy. But even, I mean, I feel like once you're a dancer, you're a dancer forever, whether or not you retired. It's just, it's sort of like inside of us. So it's always there. And I think also like, I don't know that I would maybe do something outside of dance in addition to, cause I just, I do have to be in the studio. I have to be in a theater often. So I think just being able to transition just to some other part of the performance is like a nice way for dancers to just still feel like a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other questions? Here in the back. We're coming to you. Thank you. I have a sort of more general question. And I want to preface it by saying that yesterday a few of us were talking about how we don't know that much about the West Coast dance scene. So many of us who are here who are truly in love
with ballet, and I'm not speaking for anybody in this audience when I say that I don't know, we don't know that much about the LA dancing. So we were speaking about how happy we are that there's a group from LA coming, because many of us are aware that there's a vibrant dancing on the West Coast, and we just don't know it that well. And again, I'm not speaking for anybody else in the room. So, you know, when we go to Paul Taylor, when we go to Martha Graham, when we go to Jose Limon, we have a certain idea of what context we're in, of what the patterns might be that we're looking for, and to be very partly incorrect about what I'm saying, that wasn't really totally correct, but don't know a thing about LA Dance Company. Know some names. We have choreographers who've come from the LA Dance Company to the East Coast and done very well. So my question is, could you briefly give us a little bit of education about the LA Dance Company? And, you know, you've been speaking very specifically, but you're speaking into a context that you know that I don't know. Mm-hmm. And most dance companies do have some overriding, I don't want to call it a philosophy or whatever I would call it, but I think you know what I'm talking about. So if you could help us understand, what is the LA Dance Company? How did it come to exist, and why does it exist in the way that it does?
Maybe the mission of the company.
Right. So first, you know, in LA, dancer has been very, it's been very hard to exist or survive, because it's Hollywood. It's movies. It's you know, it's not something that is part of the history, although there is a little bit of it, but tough. And for Benjamin, and when he moved there, he
Benjamin, who was a principal dancer in New York City Ballet, decided to move out here.
To move to LA and really fell in love with the city and everything it had to offer, and it was like, I gotta bring dance in a more substantial way. So that was his goal, his mission, and I think he succeeded, but it's definitely a struggle. And you know, I think his mission or his desire is to always bring artists together, and using, there's a lot of artists in LA, so you know, painters,
visual
artists, to also try to bring something else to dance. And so that was the main idea, was collaborating with choreographers that we know, or new choreographers, but really putting them with artists that you wouldn't necessarily put together to create a dance piece. You know, it's, sorry, hang here.
And composers,
yes. Speaking of microphone.
Well, you're
registered. So, yeah, really, it's really been.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The drive of the company is to use the local culture and bring it up to front and try to bring it elsewhere. Mm-hmm.
We could sit here all day with you guys, but we did. We are over. Thank you both so much for joining us this morning, and we hope all of you will come out to see Elegance Project tomorrow.
Thank you guys. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks everyone for coming out. Thank you.
Conversations on Dance is part of the Acast Creator Network. For more information, visit conversationsondancepod.com.